We are live. But yeah, we're recording here. Main Green Nation Podcast, episode 29. What does it mean? It means it's nearly football season. That's what it means. 1 week away from the biggest game ever. It's only the biggest game ever because it's the next game. Would you agree?
I would agree. And it adds merit to it because it's in Texas. And it's against Texas.
Yeah. And, like, it's... I know some people, they kind of rankle at the mention of the disparity in talent, in resources, in prestige, in any of the boxes that you want to tick between our school, University of North Texas, and their school, University of Texas. But I think it's kind of ridiculous to pretend like the disparity between the two doesn't exist. You know? North Texas is not Texas. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. They have 100,000 vanilla rich white fans that are going to tune in and be there on Saturday. And, you know, our couple thousand fans are going to show up and we'll probably be louder than them, you know, per person.
Yeah, yeah. Our per capita noise is going to be greater. I like that. I could live with that. All right, so big news came out today. Dan McCartney jumped on a video and released the depth chart, the much-awaited depth chart. I think we, for the most part, knew who was going to play where, like everywhere else, except quarterback. But you were not surprised. You were not surprised to see Josh Greer take the starting job. Win the starting job from Andy McNulty.
No, I wasn't surprised. I thought Josh had more talent coming into the competition, and I just think that his talent needed just a little bit more time to understand the offense. He was able to grasp it over the summer. He was able to, you know, continue learning, you know, get better within the system that Coach Canales and McCartney want. Coach McCartney talked about his understanding of it. So, yeah, I just think that his talent was able to overweigh the game management that, you know, McNulty probably would have provided.
Do you think so? I mean, you say game management, and I think who said that today? Somebody said David Ash. I think it was David Ash that said that. Somebody called him a game manager or said, you know, like, is that a knock on anybody being called a game manager? And he was like, no, I think everybody's a game manager. Even Peyton Manning's a game manager. So, I mean, what does that mean? What do you mean by a game manager?
They play within the system that they're in. I mean, when I think of game manager, I don't think of a playmaker at the quarterback. I mean, yeah, they're going to make some big plays, but they're not being asked to go out there and make a play. Probably a better term instead of game manager is distributor. Like at, for instance, Ohio State, they have Braxton Miller. He was a playmaking quarterback. He's gone. They're bringing in probably some redshirt freshman, you know, from Wichita Falls, JT Barrett. And now he's going to be a game manager. He's going to be a distributor on the offense, distribute the ball to playmakers.
Yeah, basically, he's not going to be the one making the plays, but he's going to be getting to the guys that can make the plays. And, you know, if he ever does beyond, like, I guess the minimum, then, you know, you count it as a plus. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
All right. I think Josh Greer can be a little bit more than just a game manager. I think that he can hit some of those bigger shots down the field. He can be the big arm quarterback, stand in the pocket, you know, deliver, you know, the 40-yard pass off play action on a dime. You know, I think that's what Josh Greer can provide to our offense.
All right. So what happened to my favorite, I guess, Mean Green, we'll call it Mean Green Nation favorite, freshman sensation, Dejon Williams?
Just not ready, just not mature yet. You know, everybody talks about the physical tools, and that's just one part of the game to being a quarterback. You have to mentally be there. And I get the sense from everybody that I've talked to and listened to is that mentally he's just not there yet. You got to remember, he's a redshirt freshman. So he's only been there 2 years, and sometimes we expect quarterbacks now to just automatically pick up an offense and run with it. It doesn't matter where they are. But I think you can point to the NFL and, you know, my favorite team, Johnny Manziel. He went from, you know, no playbook and four-word play calls to now a 400-page playbook and, you know, 20-word play calls. And it's a tough time grasping it. And so maybe Dejon's, you know, struggling a little bit with that, struggling a little bit with college, maturity, going to school, and playing football.
You know, to that I'd say I agree, and I think Dan McCarney said as much in his little video reveal. He said he, you know, he needs to work on maturing and this, that, and the other. But that was a key word that I noticed there. I'll say this about like 400-page playbooks and you know 18-syllable play calls is I'm not the biggest fan of those. I feel like ease of communication is probably the best. So you go with the call that, you know, you can communicate in the least amount of words. And I think there's something to be said for some of those spread offenses that just rely on, like, a signal. Like, you know, whatever.
Right.
All right, so, but that said, Dejon Williams went from being, I don't want to say, he played against Idaho, and he kind of tweaked his knee, I think it was.
I mean, that's what they tell us.
Yeah, yeah. I disagree. I don't believe him, but it could be. We'll take it at face value and say he tweaked something. He got a red shirt.
Right. And I mean,
we haven't seen him since.
Against Idaho, he looked good in the plays that we saw him.
Right.
And I really hope that that's not the last we see at Dejon. I hope that he works through everything and he's able to, you know, compete and maybe win a starting job next year. Who knows? You never know what quarterback situations, like McCarney was saying with Sam Bradford. He's down and he's out. Now number two's in. Well, you hope for the best and you don't want to wish injuries on anybody, but you never know with the quarterback position. And Dejon, he needs to go out and prepare every week like he's going to be the starter and show that he can be mature.
Yeah, that's something that Andrew McNulty's had to do. I mean, he was in the mix to compete for the job last year. He didn't win it, and here he is again, and he didn't win it again.
Right, but he moved up to number two this year. Last year he was third.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's making progress, yeah. I guess contrast that with Kenny Byers, who went from walk-on to now a captain. Like, walk-on started, now the captain. Integral part of the defense. I don't know, it's just interesting. And there's, you know, there are multiple cornerback positions. There's only one quarterback position, and that one has all the scrutiny. Like, everybody sees that guy play, and everybody has an opinion on it. Very few have an opinion on cornerbacks and things. But just interesting to note that, like, on the same week that, you know, Kenny Byers gets named captain, or one of the captains, Dejon Williams, who, you know, was receiving effusive praise from Dan McCarney last year, you know, he gets his one line, the one line spoken about him is like, yeah, he just needs to mature and continue to get better and, you know, practice like it, you're going to play every week.
Yeah, well, you know,
just interesting.
McCartney's lived off, you know, those guys like Kenny Byers. They've helped, you know, this program grow. And Kenny had a scholarship offer from Air Force, right, if I believe?
I think
it was. Yeah, it was one of those schools like that. And, I mean, he came to UNT, and, I mean, he's one of my favorite players on the team because he just works hard, plays solid fundamental defense, and you can see by the way he carries himself on the field why the players respect him.
Right.
And why they would name him the starting captain.
Yeah. He's, like I said, we've talked about it. I've talked about him a lot in multiple venues. We've talked about him here on MeanGreenNation.com. I even wrote a post where I just kind of recycled a post on Underdog Dynasty. I'm a fan. And the thing to look at, when you're looking at him, you don't know football, you're like, all right, what's the big deal about Kenny Byers? He's not Deion Sanders out there, but he can tackle as well as anybody on the team. He doesn't blow people up like Laramie Lee, but he wraps them up and he keeps a 3-yard pass a 3-yard pass. And that is essential to this offense because John Sclodaney likes to keep everything in front of the defense there. You make a quick tackle, you know, and that's the best you could hope for. There's a lot of teams that make a living, that design their whole offense around taking a short pass long or just making all the little short passes and turning a 3-yard pass to a 5-7-yard gain when Kenny Byers is out there. He keeps him a 3 yard gain, and that does everything that you need for the defense to do on first and second down. So I love him.
It frustrates an offense because they're not getting the big plays that they want, and sometimes then they try and press a little bit more. Maybe the guy tries to, he doesn't think about tucking the ball away. Then he's trying to get up the field as fast as he can, and maybe he drops it or something like that. So it's frustrating when a defense is able to keep everything in front of them and then make the plays, like we did last year.
Totally agree. All right, so let's go quickly through the two deep. I'm interested, and everybody's interested in these things when they're released, but they change so quickly. I mean, last year, Zach Whitfield was the opening day starter, and then three games in, he was on the bench. He was the third corner. But, stuff like this happens all the time. So I don't want to read too much into this. Next week is going to be an entirely new depth chart, and we're going to have, hot sports opinions about that one. So let's get these out of the way, I guess. Josh Greer started QB. The line, we pretty much penciled this one in or pinned this one in.
Yeah, I think the one thing to point out about the offensive line that was kind of a question mark was whether or not Cyril Lemon was going to be the right guard or whether he was going to be the right tackle. So Sean McKinney gets that start at right guard. They're going to slide Cyril Lemon out to right tackle. It'll be a little bit of adjustment for him. And that first game, he's going to be matched up with Cedric Reed. And that's an All-American candidate there going against another All-American candidate. So I'm really excited about that matchup. But it's going to, he's got to win that more often than not for us to be successful.
That's the thing. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I know 2 years ago, Derek Thompson had got sacked the least amount of times out of everybody in the nation. And I think last year we had a similar kind of number there. Is that right?
Yeah. We only gave up 11 sacks last year, I believe.
Right. And all that, it was kind of a combination thing. We didn't really have 7-8-step drops where, Derek Thompson sitting back there and scanning the field. A lot of it was quick, one, two read kind of throws. And there's a lot of runs, too. There were a lot of runs. So we do a bunch of things to kind of eliminate the possibility of a sack. And it's good because sacks are like one of the biggest destroyers of an offense, of a drive. I think I was reading some stats somewhere, and I forget. It's basically like one of the biggest drive killers.
Right.
Drop passes, incompletions. You'd rather have any of those things. Drop passes and incompletions are the same thing, I know. Do you have any hot sports opinions about Skip Caldwell, Carlos Harris, Darvin Kidsey, Darius Terrell? I know Darius Terrell basically, he tweeted like, that depth chart that he released wasn't entirely accurate, that, I'm going to start out wide a couple plays, and then tuck inside when they go 11 formation.
Yeah, we'll see exactly how it plays out, because if you read it, it says Carlos Harris or Darius Terrell. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that we'll see, Carlos Harris split out wide, and when Harris is wide and Kidsey's on the other side, we'll probably see Darius Terrell slide into that slot, which is kind of unique to have him in such a big wide receiver in the slot, but it's like he's an extension of a tight end on the field when he plays there.
Yeah.
And Carl Caldwell getting, somewhere he's going to play against UT, whether he's on the field with the first three wide receivers or not, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's good to see the young man, he transferred here. He's a senior. Just good things from him. You've heard good things all throughout camp. He's a speedy wide receiver. And so, hopefully he can make some type of impact against Texas, because he's one of those guys where you talk about the short passes that we threw last year. I can see us throwing short screen passes to Carl Caldwell and hoping that he can turn that into something.
Yeah, one name, I guess, conspicuously absent from all of these, like everywhere, was T. Gordy. I know you were like super high on him, and he was a big time recruit.
Right.
So, what does that mean for all the T. Gordy fans out there that he's not on the depth chart?
He's not on the depth chart, and he's not on the travel squad, so he's not making the trip down to Austin either.
Right.
Like you said, it's the first depth chart. He's a freshman that came in the summertime. and a lot of the guys that are on the depth chart have been there for 2 or 3 years, and so Dan McCartney had to take the wide receivers that were most game ready, ready to play at the University of Texas in front of 100,000 people on national television, and Figuri just wasn't one of those guys yet. It doesn't mean that you got to give up on him. I mean, he's a freshman. It'd take time to develop.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I totally agree there. It's a very unique situation. This is not what it was last year when we opened up against Idaho, you know, at home against a clearly inferior opponent. This is, you know, Texas. There are 100,000 people, 100,000 opposing fans is different than, you know, 20-plus thousand home-friendly fans.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Again, tight ends. We have solid tight ends. They can block. They can do a little catching of the ball. But mostly we want them to run block. Marcus Smith and the other Smith guy.
I'm hoping that Marcus Smith can be some type of receiving threat this year. Athletically, I mean, he's really gifted. He could really make it hard for defensive coordinators to game plan and try and figure out somebody to guard him. So if he's improved his hands over the summer and becomes an offensive weapon for Josh Greer and Coach Canales, my God, our offense is going to be, you know, really good then.
Yeah, and you know, like we have some flexibility there. I mean, Darius Terrell, he played tight end at Texas, or at least they tried to convert him to a tight end, and we got him back and stuck him at receiver. But he has a big frame, so he can do some run blocking too. So even if he's out there as like a third wide receiver, like you said, he's kind of like an H-back. You know, he's a blocking threat, and that kind of that versatility there opens things up a little bit. Okay, so let's go to the defensive line. This is the big question, I guess. This is the, you know, where most of the heft and the experience and the production is gone. Chad Polk, Lincoln, Moore, Mason, those are like four of them, but they're all going to rotate. You're going to see a lot of all of them, yeah. Like we did last year. We saw, you know, basically 8-9 guys. Anything stood out to you from what Dan McCartney said?
Yeah, he, like you just said, 8 to 10 guys are going to rotate. You're not, because if you look at those first four guys, the average weight is like what, 252 between them, and yeah. the average weight for the starting UT offensive line is going to be 309 pounds. That's 52, you know, pounds per person that we're looking at.
Yeah, but, and it's not just like a static 52. It's like 52 that's like leaning on you, trying to push you out of the way.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about our defensive line, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, is that they don't win with just being, you know, stronger than you. They win with technique, and they win by being quicker. So, you know, Sid Moore may weigh 257 pounds, but if he can win the hand battle with one of the guards on the inside and get around him using his quickness, okay, he's done his job. He's penetrated. He's being a disruptor. And that's what I think that our defensive line is. They're pests. They're penetrators, disruptors. They're not big guys that are just going to, you know, push the pocket back. They got to, you know, work their way through there.
Yeah, and increasingly in today's college football, in 2014, you need guys, pretty much all 11 guys on defense, to be able to run. You can't just have big, you know, 300-400 pounders that just kind of take up space, unless you're like in the SEC. But pretty much everywhere else, you need guys that can run and move. And basically, like you said, especially if you're undersized already, you need to make up for it some other place athletically. I don't know. I mean, that's the biggest question. I think not only was the line, does the UT offensive line outweigh the UNT defensive line, but the two running backs they have over there, they're pretty solid too. They're like 230, like 240, I think one of them's 240, something like that. They're big guys.
222 and 210.
Yeah, same thing. They're big guys is what I'm saying. And so they're going to try to run the ball down the throat. That's what like Charlie Strong said. Every indication is that they really are going to try to run the ball. They're going to be kind of vanilla. They're going to come out there kind of fancy. They're going to line up, lean on us, try to run.
Quite simply, they're going to challenge our manhood.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing to do. If I'm a Texas fan, this is what I want to see. I'm like, we got two stud running backs. We got a giant offensive line. Let's see if we can run the ball. That's the quickest way, right? The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. You run right up at them. And if they let you run, if we let them run it right at us, then, you know, it doesn't matter whatever else we do. It'll be all she wrote.
I think Texas fans, they know, well, they think that they can run the ball against us, regardless of anything. So I think they more want to see David Ash and what he can do against us. So, you know, we know what John Skladany's game plan is going to be, is not to get beat over the top. And we have the secondary to be able to go one-on-one with the UT wide receivers, because they don't scare me, and I don't think they scare UNT. And we're going to put, you know, nine guys in the box. We're going to crowd the line of scrimmage like we did against Georgia. It's going to be the same exact game plan here. And if we're able to get them in, you know, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 situations where they have to throw the ball, I think we're going to win those situations, because I think our defensive line is really good at pass rushing, and I think our secondary can cover their wide receivers just fine.
Yeah, they're missing like a handful of guys. Was it Dajae, whatever his name is?
Daze Johnson isn't probably going to play. Their wide receivers are Marcus Johnson, who's a junior. He had like 300 yards receiving last year. He's a good vertical threat. Then they have John Harris. He's a senior. He's been like a star of their spring camp for the past 3 years and hasn't done anything. And then they got some kid named Ty Templin, a sophomore. Never heard of him. Never seen him play. And after that, it's freshmen.
I agree. I think that's one of the, like, we have an experienced secondary. I'd like to see Zach Whitfield not get beat over the top. Every year, he's had at least one where he just got smoked on a go route. I think that's, you know, wherever he lines up, you know, we're going to see some rotation. Maybe, how are they doing the nickel, our nickel package? Is Byers lining up on, like, on the inside corner as a nickel back, or is he staying on the outside? Do you know?
I'd imagine he'll probably stay on the outside. I think they'll probably stick with Whitfield on the inside as a nickel. And it may switch up to be James Jones, but I think you want to stay with what you did last year, Whitfield on the inside.
And so I think look for that. If you're watching the game, look for that. Look where Zach Whitfield lines up and see if Texas tries to basically test him out, open him up a little bit, and see if he can defend a go route. That's been his weakness, you know, since he converted over from running back. He's been solid. He's picked off a couple passes. What is it, like 2, 4, something?
He's dropped a lot of them too. His weakness has been early in the game over the top. It's been that early play action, you know, go deep on Zach Whitwell. Well, he's not going to be in there, you know, that early, and it's probably not going to be a play action play when he's in there. So I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be okay.
No. That's the thing I'm looking for, though. Yeah, I mean, I agree. You're right. I'm just nervous about it. Like, as it's getting closer, I'm, one, getting, like, more confident, but also getting nervous. I'm like, oh, God, we could just lose the game with all these things. So I agree. I think I'm confident in our secondary that we're not going to just get smoked. Was it Georgia scored? Was that 99 yarder? Was that on Zach Whitfield too? I want to say it was. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I have to go back. It was either him or James Jones. It wasn't Byers. Yeah. I know that.
Right. And then so Sheldon Wade is balling out, and then Laramie Lee is laying wood on everybody. I think we have a solid. We have a solid secondary. I don't think we're not going to win any awards. Maybe. But we could maybe win Conference USA with this squad.
I'm not nervous at all about our defense. You listen to a Texas fan, and they expect to beat us 59-3 or 42-7. They expect to score. They are not going to score over 35 points on this team. They won't do it. Their offense doesn't have the capability to do it, and our defense isn't going to let them do it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said about beating yourself, or about not beating yourself, I mean. And since Dan McCartney's been here, there's been less and less of UNT beating themselves, like being out of position, making poor tackles, making stupid penalties. You know, like, they were still there, like his second year, 2011, 2012, there were still a lot of big plays. But last year, there were a handful of big plays in the first, second, third games of the year, and then it creeped up again in that UTSA game. But for the most part, it was the ability of the defense to lock everybody up, make the tackles they're supposed to make, be in the positions they're supposed to be in. And that, you know, that was the crux, the secret sauce of the defense there.
Right.
Yeah, and even against the big boys, even against LSU and Georgia and Kansas State, you know, I think in the end they out-talented us. And Dan McCartney was talking about this is one of the deeper teams that he's had for a while.
Right. Yeah. I'd be even willing to say that we're deeper than UT at some positions.
I think, definitely agree there, yeah.
I think our offensive line is deeper than their offensive line. And, you know, the one thing that you were talking about being nervous, and I've been nervous too. I had that nervous excitement feeling like, you know, the game's almost here. I'm nervous. I want us to play well. I'm not sure. The one thing that really has me nervous is our offense and moving the ball and scoring points against their defense, because their defense is pretty good. You know, our offensive line is probably a top 25 offensive line in the country, but their defensive line is probably a top 10. You know, their defensive line isn't that deep. It's just got four really good guys. When you talk Cedric Reed, Shiro Davis, I think the guy's named Desmond Jackson, and Malcolm Brown. So you look at those four guys, specifically Malcolm Brown. He's had a really good camp at UT that I've heard. And Malcolm Brown and Desmond Jackson, they both weigh about 300 pounds. That matchup against Caden Kirby and Sean McKinney and Mason Wibarbo, that's going to be a dynamic matchup. That's going to be fun. The trenches in this game are going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
And they're going to determine the game, too.
Yeah, and so, I mean, so what is the secret there, I guess, or what is the game plan? The thing is that, well, we won't be able to get to their second, their twos and their threes unless we have the ball long enough to get those guys tired. And that means we need a long drive or two. If you look at last year, we set a bunch of records. It was like the first time in a long time that we scored like 400 points, that we had, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 yards. I forget what it was. This, that, and the other. Lots of offensive records, the highest point total average in a while. But a lot of that had to do with the way the defense is, like, scoring points, one, or creating turnovers in a short field, or the way that Breland Chancellor was returning kicks and getting into good field position. That's not like a knock on the offense, but just kind of a realistic assessment of them. That this is, they had a lot of struggles moving the ball. And there was a lot of big plays against the weaker teams. Brandon Byrd would break one. Jimerson would break one. Pegram had a few. But there weren't a whole lot of drives where we could say, all right, you know, let's just do what we do and move the ball down the field. And Antoine Jimerson had some fumble problems last year, and that's why he kind of got benched for a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, now he's going to be getting the bulk of the carries again. And he's an important guy, and behind him are two freshmen. So I'd like to see him be the Jimerson of the ULL game, and the Jimerson where he's scoring touchdowns, and not the Jimerson that's fumbling the ball. I think that's going to be key there.
You know, and the bright lights, the big time games. That's when Jimerson comes out to play. So I think he'll do good against Texas, and you know, the one. You talk about the two freshmen behind Reggie Pegram and Jimerson. You know, we're excited to see, you know, Jeffrey Wilson and Willie Ivory to see, you know, what those guys bring to the offense. But, yeah, you talk about, okay, we want to have those big plays, of course, yeah, but we need to see success rate. And what's his name? Bill Conley, he talks about his five factors, and one of them is success rate and winning games, and that's getting 50% of the yards you need on first down, so at least getting 5 yards, and then on third down, getting 70% of the yards, or second down, you get 70%, and then 100% on third down. So that's the type, you know, we need to at least get 5 yards every first down, and just keep moving the chains, you know, because the last thing we want to see is our defense get put on the field after, you know, three consecutive three and outs. And now they got to stop Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray again. You know, we can't have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's basic football. Like, you know, it's great seeing those stats, and like there's a number to kind of and like a metric to place on like long time football, you know, smart smart football. You know, like every coach, that was the whole thing with like Bill Walsh trying to get short passes. It was like an extension of the running game. It was the whole reason teams like to run the ball first, because, you know, it's usually positive, especially if you have a really good run game. And you don't get sacked and this, that, and the other. A lot of it is just like, you know, you have three downs to get a first down. And if you're trying to get them all on 3rd and 10, it's like trying to cram for a test on the night before. You know, you might be able to do it, but it's risky. And, you know, you're not putting yourself in the best position to win there.
Right.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more. We haven't mentioned the linebackers. Fred Scott, Sed Ellis, Derek Okwune. Thoughts?
You know, I'm happy to see that Sed got, you know, worked through all his offseason troubles and, you know, was able to claim a starting position, because I would have put him as a projected starter way back when we did the preview. I just wasn't sure about, you know, his legal issues. So I'm happy for the young man, because he really is a dynamic player at linebacker. Fred Scott, he's a big hitter. He's, you know, a run stuffer. I'm interested to see how he performs, you know, in the passing, you know, when he's forced to guard somebody or drop back into coverage. You know, you point out so many times before the Zach Orr play where he's running, you know, 30 yards down the field and is able to tip a pass where Trice intercepts it. Can Fred Scott do that? I'm not so sure. And then you got the guy behind him, Anthony Wallace. It'd be interesting to see. He's going to see the field. And then Jamal Marshall, I think he's going to see the field a lot too, because he's, when you look at all the linebackers, specifically Sed Ellis, Jamal Marshall, Calvin Miner, they're all undersized, but they're really athletic and they're really fast. And then, of course, the staple, you know, Derek Okwune. He's just like the linebacker last year, you know, Zach Orr and Will Wright. You know, Derek Okwune is just a good player. You know, I'm glad that we have him on this defense.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to say there. A lot of this stuff that we're saying is stuff that we've said before on this podcast or on the site posting things, and a lot of stuff that Dan McCartney himself said when he was like revealing all these things. We're going to get a lot of undersized guys in Conference USA, being North Texas and not being Texas or Texas A&M or even TCU now. So the kind of thing that we need is guys that are like, that play, you know, all over the field, that play with heart. And like what he says, he's not undersized with his motor, the way he runs around, that's what Dan McCartney says.
Right.
Yeah, and so that's the kind of guy we need. And I think we have a good collection of those kinds of guys. Chad Polk, same thing, converted linebacker. He's out there at 6 foot, 231, playing defensive end. And he made some really nice plays last year, especially against Rice. There was a couple that he really blew up the entire run scheme there.
Right. The guys like Sed Ellis and Jamal Marshall, what they allow you to do is to stay in a 4-3 defense, you know, on first and second down, you know, even if you're spread out across the field, because they can cover so much ground, like Will Wright did last year. You know, that's the role that those guys are going to play for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's not 1994. You don't line up with these big, you know, giant linebackers out there that are really there to stuff the run.
Texas is going to line up with one. Steve Edmond, that boy's pretty big.
Yeah, they can get away with that kind of thing because, like, at Texas and Alabama, they get guys that are like monsters but also run like safeties, you know? That's a whole different breed there. It's like Ed Reed, right? He can get from like the line of scrimmage all the way to deep down the field. You know, like he's in two places at once. They're freaks of nature. We don't have freaks of nature here. We have good athletes, and that's just fine. What did you think about Trevor Moore getting the kicking battle, right?
Yeah, that was a little bit surprising because Zach Paul, you know, he had a good year last year. Same thing with the punter, you know, Blake Mossick. He had a great year last. He had a really good year last year, and he gets beat out by Eric Kina. So obviously, you have to believe that Eric Kina is really good. And the same thing with Trevor Moore. You know, like McCartney had said in his reveal, that he was just more consistent. I'm interested to see how consistent is he with 100,000 people screaming at him.
Yeah.
You know, because you're a freshman, you're coming from Edmond, Oklahoma, and now you're going to play at the University of Texas. And so that's going to be kind of crazy for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. It's good that guys that were established starters, established successful starters, even guys like Tony Johnson who filled in for Blake Dunham last year after Blake Dunham got hurt, they come back and they get beat. You know, like, your position is never safe. You still have to work for it. It's not like something that you can just say, well, I mean, all you have to do is look at my record last year, coach. I mean, you constantly have to earn your spot on the team. And I think that that creates a kind of hunger in the program, like a life in the program, something, you know, that it's easy to contrast with Texas right now. With, you know, that was kind of the big knock. A lot of guys had this sense of entitlement over there, that Mack Brown had these, you know, signing guys, four or five star guys, and they're like, well, you know, I'm me, and so I you know, of course I'm going to start, or this, that, and the other. At least that's what I hear and read and hear shouted in the streets. Right. Is that about right?
Yeah, because a lot of the UT fans think that, okay, North Texas lost all these starters. They've got nobody coming back. No, we're not UT. We took our players that were behind our talented guys, and we developed them, something that Mack Brown didn't know how to do. He didn't know how to develop talent. Well, I got news for you. Dan McCartney knows how to develop talent. He knows how to make players work hard. Now, Texas has that in Charlie Strong now, but we've got guys with talent coming up. And they don't. They're not going to see that until Saturday night. They're not. They're going to be like, "Whoa, hey, these guys can play."
Yeah, you know, it's a great feeling. It's for, you know, I really appreciate it. You go out there, even if we get blown out by, even if it is the 59-2, like, you know, Texas fan thinks will happen. I think one of the greatest things about Dan McCartney football under him in the last couple of years has been that you go out and you watch a team that, for the most part, there's been some, you know, there are kids, is that they compete and they kind of make you proud to be associated with them. And that's something that North Texas didn't have there for a while. And as a guy that grew up, well, I didn't say grew up, but that, you know, went to school and you see your team, you're like, are they even trying? What's going on? Like, you know, did they even practice this week? Did they practice football that they're going to play this today on Saturday? And it's great to see a team that looks like they practice, like they give a damn, like the coaches, they care, and that they know what they're doing. It's great entertainment, you know?
Yeah, I mean, especially against the, you know, the power teams the last couple of years, or, you know, the last couple of times. LSU, for a little while, we played hard. And, you know, we played hard the whole game. We got out, man. That's okay. And then the Kansas State game, that was like the first game where we were like, hey, you know, all of a sudden our team starting to get it, and you started to see that program, or our program, transitioning to where we could compete with these guys. And then Georgia last year. Well, now can we take the next step against UT on Saturday and actually win this game, or take it to the fourth quarter, you know, the last 2 minutes? Can we do that?
Yeah, and I think that would be, if we put up a game against Texas, because, like, everybody here, there's a lot of people here in Texas that saw UNT versus Georgia, but, you know, it's Georgia. Even though they're an SEC team, it's still another team. Texas is king here in Texas, you know, obviously. And to do that to them, everybody and their mom, old ladies, I was in Austin while they were playing Kansas State, and there's old ladies there cheering on the Longhorns and things. I mean, it's like a religion. And to do that to them, that's the best advertisement for the program that there could be, you know.
Right.
Winning Conference USA, winning the Hard Dallas Bowl, you know, winning, you know, whatever. Blowing everybody out, going undefeated at Apogee. None of those things would do as much for the program as giving Texas a run for their money in Austin, you know, on opening day.
Yeah, you'd earn respect from the whole state is what it basically would do.
Yeah. And that's why I mentioned, you know, I started out the show by saying that this is probably one of the biggest games that we've ever played. You know, like in 2005 or whatever it was, like Texas is coming off a national championship and North Texas was in a different spot. You know, I think, you know, we had a vastly inferior stadium. I think the morale around the program wasn't as high, even despite having won a couple. Yeah, it was in a different place. Right now we feel good. We have a nice stadium. We're in a good conference. We have some rivals. We have a coach that we believe in. We're coming off a bowl win. Texas is not coming off a bowl win.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, we're feeling good right now. Yeah.
There's lots of questions down at Austin. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about all the questions about, you know, UNT. They got just as many questions. Who are going to be their wide receiver playmakers? You know, who's is their defense going to be able to, you know, get over what happened last year? Are their linebackers going to be good? Their secondary, they got Quandre Diggs. He's pretty good. But they may end up starting a freshman at safety. They may start a walk-on at safety. A walk-on at the University of Texas starting.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that are going on down there. So it's not a, you know, we're walking in playing a team off a national championship.
Right.
They got a lot of questions. They don't have a lot of answers. But we're going to find out Saturday night if we and them have answers.
Yeah, I like that. Like, I think we are more like Texas of 2005 coming in with Colt McCoy than Texas is like them back then. You know what I'm saying? Coming off a bowl win. We're just trying to replace a guy that, you know, a guy that won a bowl for us, bowl MVP, a bunch of productive seniors that did a whole lot of things there. We're more like that 2005 Texas team than Texas is, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, that 2005 Texas team, they had a really good offensive line with a young quarterback. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's one, I know. That's one. Didn't Colt McCoy, like, set the like pass completion record that year, or like the most touchdowns or something? He set a record, and I think it was broken by Sam Bradford the next year. I forget what it was. So, I mean, hey, I mean, yeah, if we can approximate that, if Josh Greer can come out, put up a touchdown or two, Jim can break a couple tackles, score a touchdown, and maybe Laramie Lee blows up one of their like freshman wide receivers and causes a fumble. You never know.
Yeah,
but that said, what? Go
ahead. There's a lot that's got to happen for us to win that game. There's a lot. Yeah.
I said, I wrote a quick Underdog Dynasty post, and it's coming out tomorrow. It's supposed to come out this afternoon, but then, like, I'm not the editor of that site, so they get to move it around. I'm like, oh, we're going to make it come out tomorrow morning. So it'll come out tomorrow morning. But I was like, all right, so how does, because my wife asked me this. She's like, so, all right, so how do we beat Texas? And here's what I said, like, on average, the way a smaller school beats a bigger school is through luck, one, because they have more talent. It's through, you know, being clever and being disciplined and, you know, being lucky, basically, playing good defense. So, all right, so how do we do that? How do we apply those things here? Some of it is, like, the other team kind of taking us lightly. So I don't think that Charlie Strong's Texas football is going to come out with any lethargy. They're going to come out, they're going to play hard. But they have a lot of questions, like you said, and we already covered that. The other thing is, like, special teams. That's where our cleverness comes in. We're not super clever on defense. We're not super clever on offense. We don't do any trick plays. We don't have a fancy offense. It's not like Northwestern versus Michigan circa 1994 or 95 or whatever it was. We don't have a fancy new offense to kind of trickery them with. What we do have is, like, attention to detail, and that's, like, special teams. We were one of the best special teams last year in 2013. Blocked 7 kicks. Returned with 5 scores. A lot of that was Breland Chancellor, but I think Carlos Harris and I think James Jones can approximate his production a little bit. Maybe they don't return it 50 yards. Maybe they return it 30 yards. I'll take it. But that's where that's where our cleverness comes in. And, the questions there. And then, you know, our toughness. That's what it is. We are super disciplined now. Way more disciplined than we ever were. I think that's how we beat it. We get luck. We've been one of the best turnover producing teams, and so a lot of that is luck. A lot of that's like you cause a fumble. I think offense recovers a fumble 51% of the time. But interceptions are less random. They're less luck reliant, and we've been able to intercept a lot of passes there. We don't have Marcus Streis, who's a ball hawk, but we still have Laramie Lee. We have experienced corners. So I'm confident in our ability to upset. Right. I don't think it's like super likely. We're like 20-point underdogs, whatever. But hey, there's my little piece. Is that what it is?
Right. Yeah, it's 24. Vegas believes that the final right now will be 38-14. That's what their score prediction is. So, I was thinking along the same lines as you, and it'll be part of the breakdown. And I'm calling the little segment my game plan, but it's more of a statistics of. Okay, what do we need to hit to beat Texas? And I was kind of looking back at what did teams do to beat Charlie Strong back when he was at Louisville? Well, you know, it looked good for UNT because the games that he lost while he was at Louisville, they were ugly. They weren't like the teams that were beating him weren't like crazy statistics. They weren't, you know, running for 300 yards and throwing for 400 yards. It was simply ugly games. So that bodes well for us because I'm hoping it can be an ugly game. You know, I'm hoping we got to hit over 150 rushing yards. We got to hit over 150 passing yards. I'd like our run to pass ratio to stay about 60-40%. That means we're being successful running the ball. Yards per play. We got to hit about 6 yards per play. We got to be explosive. We got to convert over, you know, 40% of our third downs. Points. We need to score over 24 points. Defensively, we got to keep them under 21 points, somewhere around there. Keep them under 150 yards rushing. Keep them under 250 passing. Keep their third downs under 40%. And then, obviously, force them to pass more than run, you know. You force them into those passing situations like we talked about earlier, and we can be successful. So those are just a little bit of some of the numbers that I've been looking at.
Yeah, I think, like, the quick way to do it is to create high variance situations. And that's, you know, like you said, like, the more plays that they have to defend, the more likely it is that we will, you know, be successful in the play or something will go wrong, you know? That's why you like three and outs if you're a defense because it's only three plays you have to defend. If you defend a 12-play drive, the likelihood that, you know, something's going to go wrong is high. Or, you know, or if you have to see 150 plays a team runs, you're going to get beat on some of them. You're not going to be able to stay disciplined. You're going to get tired. It creates more variance, you know? You don't want that if you're Texas. More variance is good for us.
If you're seeing 12 plays on defense, something's already gone wrong in the first 11.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, I'm just looking for North Texas not to allow big plays. That's one. And that's what I'm saying. So we want to create more variance that way, that we want to make them make a long drive, you know, 12 plays, kick a field goal, 12 plays, score a touchdown, and not one play score, not that 99-yard touchdown, not the, like, I think against LSU, it was like 67-yard run, 30-yard run.
Yeah, you know. Close, you know, obviously our secondary is good, so close the gaps on those, you know, receivers running down the field. You know, close the running lanes on those guys running, so it's not the big plays. And force David Ash to be a good quarterback to beat you, because, look, he hasn't played in almost a year. He's coming off a concussion. Yeah, Charlie Strong can say he's had an unbelievable camp, but he hasn't played a game in almost a year. And I don't care if you're Tom Brady. Tom Brady was rusty coming off the ACL tear. So I'm expecting David Ash, he's probably going to be a little bit rusty. So if we can force him into some uncomfortable situations, he may make a mistake. It's not Colt McCoy. It's not Vince Young. It's David Ash.
And he has some wheels on him. He can run a little bit. That's kind of what I'm scared of. That's mostly what I'm concerned about. Is like
they do not want David Ash to take off running. They do not want it because he's a very aggressive individual and competitive, and he's not going to get down. And he was knocked out a whole year for a concussion.
Yeah.
Now they could preach it to him all along, but when you get into a
get
game,
out of bounds, yeah, you got your adrenaline
you get
pumping.
Yeah, you're not thinking about it. You're just thinking about, I'm going. and then all of a sudden, Laramie Lee comes from nowhere, and bam, Tyrone Swoops is in the game. And then all of us UNT fans were rubbing our hands together. We're like, oh, boy, we got him now.
Yeah, Tyrone Swoops did not look good against Oregon. He looked shaky out there.
Supposedly, he got a little bit better, so.
Yeah, I heard he's, like, inaccurate or something like that, or, like, he was inconsistent. He was basically Dejon Williams for them over there. Same thing with, like, Gerard Hurd, I forget. I don't know how you pronounce his name.
They're very raw quarterbacks. They need time to develop.
Yeah.
So, if somehow we knocked Ash out of the game, then I would get really excited.
Yeah. I think, yeah, this still is, despite everything, you know, despite us losing on everybody and anyone who was on a poster last year, this is the best time to beat Texas. This is, if there was ever a time that was ripe for plucking the Texas, you know, fruit. It's now. It's this team coming off a bowl win, full of confidence, with everybody watching, and all the pressure. Even then, all the pressure is on Texas. It's on Charlie Strong in his first game. It's on David Ash, you know, to perform as a quarterback. It's for, you know, Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray to dominate. Like, if they get stopped for a 3-yard loss or, you know, a 2-yard game, you know, they go 3 and out the first drive, everybody's going to be kind of nervous. Like, what is this? You know, well, maybe this is the wrong decision here. Same old Texas here. Can't run the ball when they should run the ball.
All the people on Orange Bloods will have a meltdown again. But if I'm Coach McCartney, I'm telling my boys, before we take the field, this may be the only time and the last time you get a chance to play Texas.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, the way that things are going now in college football, we might not get to schedule them ever again. So how would you like to be the team, the mm-hmm. only team, the last team to play Texas and beat them?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a player and you don't get fired up about that, you know, I don't know. You need to check your pulse. You shouldn't have made the bus ride down there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in Section 32, which I think is the UNT section there. I'm going to be clad in green. I'm going there Friday. I'm going to be at the – there's like an alumni thing at Silo on 7th. The UNT alum owned Silo on 7th, so we got to support them with our beer dollars. I'm going to go do that. Then I'm going to tailgate all day Saturday, and then I'm going to go to the game. And I'm going to bite my nails all the way to the quick. So,
we acquired some tickets. My sister's best friend, she lives in Germany now, and she's a season ticket holder, and she gave me the ticket. So I'm going to be taking my dad to the game. We'll be sitting amongst UT fans. I was directed not to, you know, make obscene gestures or anything like that because they're nice people. I don't care. I just told them, I was like, I'm going to be wearing my green. If we do something good, I'm going to stand up and cheer. I don't care.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a difference between being a jerk and supporting your team. You know? And
I'm only going to be a jerk if they're a jerk to me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong for enthusiastically supporting your team. Nothing wrong with that at all.
I know. And so I'm going to be sitting in the horseshoe section. So that's kind of San Jacinto Boulevard, I think, is right behind there.
Right.
So we'll be over there. I got a parking pass. Man,
Look at you. You're just fancy time. All right. Okay. Big wig.
Free. Can't beat free tickets, man. Can't beat it.
No, I went to a local soccer game, and we got the suite, the VIP parking. It was pretty legit there. Even, you know, it's small-time soccer, but it's nothing like being in the suite, getting the VIP treatment there, man. And they were free for me, you know. I paid for these Texas tickets, these overpriced Texas tickets.
Speaking of soccer, I think you should give a shout out to the ladies.
Oh yeah,
down on soccer.
Yeah, I keep saying that this year I want to really emphasize some women's soccer coverage. They were picked to finish second in the conference. So Rachel Holden is she has 2 goals on the year. That gives her 14 in her career. She had 12 her freshman year. I don't know who called the game. I was watching it on Mean Green All Access, and that guy was terrible. It's like he never saw the sport before. That's reasonable, but I'm just thinking you're like, I have to call a soccer game today. I'll tell you what, let me turn on a soccer game beforehand, kind of figure out what's going on, so I can sound like I know what I'm talking about. And hey, good.
He came from, you know, somewhere where they didn't see soccer. You know, because it's kind of a big deal up here in North Texas.
Yeah.
And in the bigger city, soccer's catching on. So, I mean, how could you not know what's going on?
Yeah, it was pretty awful. And here's the thing, is a lot of people say, well, you got to, you know, it's a student broadcaster. I mean, you got to, you know, you can't expect professional quality. I'm like, all right, look, if I'm out here criticizing, you know, Derek Thompson, if I'm out here criticizing Tony Mitchell, I'm going to be criticizing, you know, Joe Schmo, the broadcaster, even if he is a student. You're 22, you're 20 years old, you're an adult, man. You got to do your job, you got to do it well. That's what I say.
Eventually, he wants to be a professional.
There you go.
Why not start acting like one now?
There you go. And I mean, you know, he's welcome to turn in and say this podcast was a whole lot of crap. And you did a lot of ums and pretty terrible stuff, Adam. And you know what? I will take it.
Because your professional job is not a broadcast.
No, it isn't. No, it's definitely not that. All right, so, yeah. UNT is 2-0. They won 3-0 against Texas Southern on Friday. They turned around and played during the heat of the day against Oregon State. Basically battled to a 0-0 draw, and then I forget, it was a Pineda, I think Carla Pineda. She got the ball around midfield, turned, fired a beautiful ball to the far corner. Rachel Holden beat the right back to it, skinned her, and slotted it just inside the right post, basically winning the game at the death, more or less. It was like, it was in the 86th minute, but it was pretty much done by then. Oregon State couldn't mount an equalizer there, and so 2-0 on the year. 4 goals in total, but Rachel Holden, the Lionel Messi of the Mean Green women's soccer team. 2 goals.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm glad to see our soccer team doing that well. Volleyball gets started up this Friday. Football Saturday. It's a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah, and hey, if you're listening to this and you're like, you know what, I go to all the games or blah, 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 you know, like, I don't have time. I'm down here in San Antonio, and, you know, Greg here, he's a working man. He's a family man. He has a job, too. And you're, like, we're now in Irving, right? I think your plan is to live in every city in the Metroplex, for at least for a year.
I'm in Irving, or as, you know, I'm in the Las Colinas part of Irving. You know, but those people that live in Las Colinas, they just say, I live in Las Colinas.
There you go.
But I work for the city of Irving, so I'm going to rep it. I live in Irving.
There you go. So, I mean, yeah, so, like, if you're closer to the action, you can make those games, and you have hot sports opinions, you want to write about it and tell the people what it is that they need to know. Just, you know, send an email. You can sign up in the forum. I cleaned up the forum a little bit. I went back to the old thing. I was getting kind of frustrated with some of the things about the site redesign, so I went back to the old site, this old site design. Now you can sign in with, like, your Twitter account. You can do that, and that will link to all kinds of stuff. It makes it easier for people. And also less spammy on my end as an administrator of the site. Long story short, if you got something to say and you want to say it, you have an avenue to do so. So feel free. So I guess, do you want to do a score prediction right now?
I'm not really good with score predictions.
I know. Nobody's going to go back and analyze it and hold you to it. It's just fun for right now. You got to end it with a score prediction. You did a whole show. You did 45 minutes on the topic. You got to predict the score.
And I feel like I need to do more studying on it. But, all right. I'm going to just predict right now, off the top of my head, 24-7, Texas wins.
What? 24-7. All right. I'm going to say, and this is because I am fully drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm bathed, and I'm a full convert. I'm going to go ahead and say that we are going to win.
Oh, snap.
27-24. With a, what's this? What's the guy's name? Moore? That guy? That kid?
Trevor Moore.
Yeah, he's going to kick a field goal at the death to win the game. And I will. I may not recover. I may run into the Austin Knight, and you may never hear from me again. And that would be great. It would be a great ending to it all.
It would certainly be an awesome ending. I mean, I would just have to replay. That would be my ringtone, is the call.
Yeah.
You know,
that is a kick. It's good.
Yes, I would just, every day, that's what I'd wake up to. I'd place that as my, you know, wake-up tune.
And yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, there's 100 ways that we could lose. Maybe better said, there's 99 ways we could lose. There's one or two ways that we could win. And I'm holding on and believing that we're going to win. We're going to go over there, we'll go down to Austin, get the win, the biggest win in University of North Texas football program history. We got new helmets, you know? You look good. You play good. There it is. That's all that needs to be said. That's maybe all the breakdown we need. We got the new helmets. Look good. You play good. You
look
win.
Look good. Feel good. Play good. That's it. Let's go win, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that said, we're done here on the Mean Green Nation podcast. You find me on the Twitter accounts at Mean Green Nation. You find Greg at MGN underscore breakdown. And you're going to be posting your breakdown this week, right?
The breakdown will come out on Friday. I've been working on it a lot already. I think it's looking good. A little bit better graphics this year, so excited.
Sweet. Yeah. There's a forum. It's MeanGreenNation.com/board. You find all that stuff on there. But you find us on the GoMeanGreen.com message board, too. All right. We're done. Thanks for listening, guys.
Good night, Mean Green Nation.